Hi, I'm Kevin DeCristofano.
I'm Sean Flanagan.
And we are the Ninja Turtle Nerds, your weekly podcast for covering the Ninja Turtle comics one murderous issue at a time. How's your week been, Mr. Flanagan?
Oh, it has been a week, Mr. DeCristofano. My goodness.
Yeah, we've had a text chain going. I'm glad you're keeping busy.
That's one way to put it, yeah. I'm going to pay the bills.
I don't know if you want to talk shop on the show, but I've got some stuff to talk about if you'd rather.
I mean, on the lighter side, I started the Crash Bandicoots, finished Spyro, somehow got less percentage done in the third one, even though I thought I was collecting everything known to man. So I just was like, I've moved on.
I'm doing the opposite because I finally started Final Fantasy X, and I'm not trying to 100% that game for like the first time like ever. Every time I play an RPG, I always play it with like the guide open next to me, and I'm like, I want to get everything. I want to experience everything. This game, I just don't care, but it's actually making me enjoy the game more.
Oh, nice.
Like, I think I would have hated this game if I did it by a walkthrough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the fact that I'm just, like, playing the game and not worrying if I miss things, it's actually making me like it.
Nice.
And then I was texting you this week about something I thought we should bring up on the show, is I've been trying to get into a new comic book series, so I've been reading a lot of issue number ones. And I gotta say, man, I think Ninja Turtles has one of the best issue number ones of all time.
So I agree.
And I know a lot of that... And I think a lot of that comes down to the fact that they didn't know there was going to be more, so it was made as, you know, its own self-contained thing. But there's so many of these stories where, like, I don't want to throw too many of them under the bus because I don't know how good they get, but I tried Bone this week, which I've tried before, and I think that first issue is always what ends up making me not read more, is not a lot happens in it. And that's kind of the summary of a lot of these series, is you read a first issue and not a lot happens. They rely on the fact that you're probably going to read the first, you know, three or four or five before you decide if you like the series or not. And that's just making me see, like, the first issue of Ninja Turtles is amazing for another reason we haven't said. It's like you pick that up and you just want more, and there is more, and it's just, it really hooks you right away.
Yeah, you had me thinking to other series that have, like, an equal number one. The only stuff I could think of was Hellboy, because that's
a good one. Yep.
Fascinating out the gate. Ice Cream Man, because it's
Atomic Robo has a good number one.
Yeah,
which is a series I should get back into. That gets compared to Hellboy a lot, though. That's probably why I thought of it.
Oh yeah. Ice Cream Man's got a really good number one, and then Spawn has a good number one. I know you sent me that, and I know it's in Legacy numbers, but I consider it a different series. But Immortal Hulk has a good number one. Especially now that I know what it's ending, but yeah,
well,
there's
not I'd a call lot. That a number one, for sure.
So I think that is a challenge if you're gonna do a book, is really
Savage Dragon. Remember I told you I was getting into Savage Dragon? The beginning of that series is so baffling. Like,
really?
I don't know if there's a mini series I'm missing or something, but like it's got like a normal number one. But then the second issue, the series takes place in Chicago. All the characters are in Chicago. But then for the second issue, he goes to New York to have a crossover with the Ninja Turtles. And funny enough, even though it's Image Comics, it's not the Image Comics Ninja Turtles, because Image Comics didn't have the Ninja Turtles yet. So it's the Mirage, I think, Volume 2 Ninja Turtles crossing over with Savage Dragon. So it's really weird to start Savage Dragon, because you read the first issue, and then the second issue, he's not in his environment. He's having a crossover story where the turtles are kind of the center of the story. And then the third issue is like what was going on in Chicago while he was gone. And then the fourth, basically you read the first five issues and Savage Dragon is barely in any of them. Like, he's in the first one and then he's kind of a background character for the next like four, because they put this like little team together. And it's after the Ninja Turtles, it starts focusing on that team they're putting together. And you're like, man, I started this because I wanted to learn about Savage Dragon. He's not in like these first five issues, but it does eventually even out. But it's a really weird way to start a series.
That's impressive, though. Your second issue, you're doing a crossover with Turtles already.
Yeah, yeah, that is really cool. I wonder if they were testing out, like, if they liked how the Image guys worked or something. Another problem I have with number ones, though, and this just occurred to me, and it's something I've always known about myself, though, but I have problems with series where the characters are all people. So things like Walking Dead or like Lumberjanes was one I tried. I can't keep track of which character is which if they don't have like distinct costumes or mutations.
Yeah.
Or like something that really makes them stand out. You know, if it's just a bunch of people in normal clothes, I'm like, I'm losing track of who you guys are.
No, that's fair enough. I mean, Walking Dead went, I know you have the last issue. It went some crazy number of issues, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't.
So I can't imagine you trying to keep track of that from the first one all the way to that.
Yeah, there was like a week where I thought I was going to get into it, and I did like it, but it's one of those things where I started. You don't even intentionally put the series down. You're just like, oh, let me read these other series, and then next thing you know, you haven't read Walking Dead in 3 weeks, and you're like, I don't think I miss it. So we parted ways.
I've had a lot of monthly books. I've tried the number one, then I get to the second issue, and then I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I mean, stuff I read that took me a while. Saga and Monstrous, I had to read those first few issues like 2-3 times before I committed to those books. And they're not bad Saga's books, too but...
adult for me.
too adult for you?
I don't know. I don't like... I tend to gear myself more towards like childish things, I think.
I'm just kind of all over the place because it looks like they're going to start re-releasing Usagi Yojimbo from the beginning in collections. So I get those
In collections. Yeah, because they've been doing the individual issues. So that makes sense.
So I get those on my comic shop site now waiting for whenever they're coming in.
There's a great collection they have, I think it's still in print, where it's all the crossovers he had with the Ninja Turtles. So you should pick that up.
Yeah, I should see if I could find that. I know IDW he shows up to. IDW Turtles has a really great first issue. I mean, we're biased, but...
Yes. Yes.
Because...
And this...
I don't feel like... I know I'm jumping to the next season, but like Volume 2 does not have the best first issue.
No.
So...
Volume 2 is basically one big story arc. It's almost like instead of Volume 2, it's more like Story 2.
And it's just split into two parts.
Yeah. So this week's issue is not a number one. It's issue 48 of Mirage Ninja Turtles called Shades of Gray. It's story by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird. We remember them. Script by Peter Laird and Jim Lawson. Pencils by Jim Lawson. Inks by Keith Aiken. And lettering by Mary Kelleher. So there's a lot of names on this one. That might be one of the deepest benches we've seen so far. Like it's usually like three people at most. This is like five people put this issue together.
And from our Twitter, I learned that A.C. Farley did the cover. So,
ooh. We like him. And in the original printings, and this is something we'll probably bring up next week too, it's called Shades of Gray Part 1. But in later printings, they gave an original title to Part 2. So if you're reading the original printings, next issue is Shades of Gray Part 2. But next week we'll talk about it. It's got a different title if you're reading. Like they gave it its own title instead of just being a Part 1, Part 2.
So if you're looking to read this one, it is on Comixology. Yep. And finally in a collection, It's in TMNT Ultimate Classics Volume 4.
Nice. I got to get caught up on my Ultimates because I know they just put the sixth one out.
I think four
is the last one I have. Yeah.
Though I don't know what's
I got to get caught up on those.
In six, but I'll find out.
Yeah, I think I have up to four. And this one came out in June of 1992. So let's take a look back of the summer of 1992 for movies. This month in entertainment.
You don't really think you'll win, do you?
So movies released in June 1992. We've got Patriot Games, Batman Returns, Unlawful Entry, Boomerang, I don't know what that is.
Eddie Murphy, and Drama.
Oh, okay. And House Sitter. All came out in June of... Oh, I got some more here, sorry. Gotta scroll down. Society, Class Act, and Kickboxer 3, The Art of War. So all of those came out in June of 1992. What's that?
Is Jean-Claude back in Kickboxer 3?
I don't know. I didn't research. I should have because he's been such a feature on this. I can check that real quick. Get my thing here.
House Sitter. That. Wow. I've seen that movie once.
Kickboxer 3, directed by Rick King, produced, blah, 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 starring Sasha Mitchell, Dennis Chan, Richard Komar. No, I don't see Jean-Claude Van Damme's name anywhere on this.
He has moved on from Kickboxer. So I'm going to go ahead and say Batman Returns.
So, the number one grossing film, yeah. What's that?
Batman Returns?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, sorry. Yep, it was Batman Returns, but this is a good time for us to talk about, because you know I've been really into the Tim Burton stuff lately. All of the videos spin, like, why he didn't come back for Batman Forever.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they'll bring up the Happy Meal thing, that McDonald's was unhappy with the dark tone of the movie and they thought it prevented them from selling Happy Meals, blah, blah, blah. And they always say basically Warner Brothers didn't like how dark Batman Returns was, and that's why they wanted to go in a lighter direction for Batman Forever. I don't think, now that I've seen this that I'm about to reveal,
yeah,
I don't think it had anything to do with the dark tone. That's their excuse that they're using. But Batman Returns was a huge drop from the first Batman movie as far as box office, and that's all they cared about. They probably correlated the box office to the dark tone, but if that dark tone sold as much as the first Batman movie, they would not have cared. It was not the tone, it was the money. Because
how much of a
Batman
drop?
Batman Returns. So Batman, one of the highest grossing films of all time when it came out, was $411 million, right?
Yeah.
Batman Returns' total box office was only $260 million. It was almost half. Like, it was a huge $200 million drop. And it was a higher budget than the first Batman movie, too. It cost over double the budget. Batman was $35 million. Batman Returns was $80 million. So it cost them twice as much money to make half. And I think that is why they went in a different direction. It wasn't the dark tone. It was the Dark Knight making no money.
Which is crazy because it's the best Batman, best superhero. I love the movie. I always thought
I'd put it on par. I love it. I don't know if I'd go best. That's kind of crazy. You think it's the best superhero movie?
Batman Returns is in my top five movies, period. It's number three.
So that's funny because I don't know if I could name there. I have definitely like tiers where I'm like, these are the best, but I don't think out of those I could pick a definitive one. You know what I mean? Like,
no, I love that movie. It is just bonkers.
Which of the two Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, and I know there were three, but I can't decide between, you know what I'm talking about, between two. I can't even decide which of those I like more. Every day it's different. I'm like, oh, yeah, I think the first one's definitely better because it does all that origin story stuff, and it's really great. But then the second one, it's got that great Dr. Octopus stuff and blah, blah. It's like I go back and forth on those. I can't even pick my favorite Spider-Man movie, let alone superhero movie.
Oh, no, no. This is top of the heap. The only thing that comes close to it out of the whole genre to me is Logan.
Logan's really good. I did on SWO Productions, their podcast, an episode on Logan you guys should check out. Did we mention that on the show? Oh, no, that's not out yet. Sorry.
It's not out.
Gonna cut that. No, I won't cut it. I'll just say I recorded an episode. I think he said it's coming out in September. So we'll mention it on the show when it's out. But yeah, it's SWO Productions. Look them up on Twitter. He's got a great podcast about superhero movies, and I recorded one about Logan. It's kind of a cool format they have where he has you randomly pick three numbers between one and something.
Yeah.
And then, because he's assigned all the movies a number, and then you get three movies, and you have to pick between one of those three. So my three were Alita Battle Angel, The Mask, and Logan. So I chose Logan. You probably would have picked The Mask, I said, on that episode because you started comics with The Mask and you got a history there.
No, I would have picked Logan. I'll get a lot of flack, but I think Logan is the best modern superhero movie.
I'd just be repeating myself. We talked about it.
No. I know, but all my
thoughts are going to be there in September.
I can separate it in that terms. I don't know, and part of it is I just like that story structure of grumpy guy does right thing and leave me alone.
Well, you and I have said there's been a flood of our childhood heroes, what we call like old sad movies now.
Yeah.
Where we got old sad Wolverine, we got old sad Luke Skywalker, we had old sad Han Solo, old sad Batman, old sad Spider-Man in Into the Spider-Verse. Now we're probably going to get old sad Ghostbusters in that new movie coming out soon.
Actually, we might
should do an old sad Ninja Turtles movie.
Ooh, I could watch that. That'd be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically Last Ronin, so we're getting that.
But if
it's not a movie, but
if the Flash movie actually stays in production, we might get an old sad Keaton Batman.
So we got two old sad Batman.
It's dating this a little, but they're filming indie right now, so we're getting insanely old, sad indie.
Even though we already had old, sad indie in the last one. He wasn't sad, though. He was just old, leave me alone, indie.
Well, maybe he's transitioned to sad now. I don't know.
So the number one songs. Let's listen to some music from June of 92. So ending their run.
No.
You got the first 2 weeks. June 6th and June 13th was Jump by Criss Cross. Number one for 8 weeks. So far, it's the longest number one song we've had. And then the next 2 weeks, June 20th and June 27th, were I'll Be There by Mariah Carey featuring Trey Lorenz. So, video games, Nintendo Power cover. I need to do more research for video games than just this. I don't feel like it's a big enough segment, but whatever. Nintendo Power cover was Lemmings Over the Edge Excitement. And then it had a little blurb in the corner that said Krusty's Funhouse Feature.
Oh, I couldn't beat that game.
I wonder which one they're talking about, because
there was an NES and games.
But isn't there a Super Nintendo one, too?
Yeah, I think there's.
And I know it's on the PC. Lemmings was everywhere.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at television from the time. TV events, June 3rd. I'm trying to put these in order now, which I didn't used to do. June 3rd. President candidate Bill Clinton appears on the Arsenio Hall show and sits in with the house band on saxophone. A move that combined that with his appearance on MTV. A lot of people say those two TV appearances won him the election. June 10th, the first ever edition of the MTV Movie Awards is broadcast.
Oh, wow.
June 26th, Club MTV ends.
Oh, no.
My iPad keeps going off here. So yeah, Club MTV ends. It was a half hour TV show, if you don't know, modeled after American Bandstand. It aired on MTV from 1987 to June of 92. And it was part of MTV's like second generation of programming after, like, when they stopped saying we're going to just do music videos all the time. We're going to kind of have like different shows. That was one of the first ones that was still music themed, but wasn't just them playing music videos. And it also started, the channel was phasing out its original five VJs.
Remember, no! They used to call
their people VJs, video jockeys, instead of disc jockeys. And they were introducing new ones. They probably turned a ripe old age of 23 and were like, nope, we're going to get them out, get the new crowd in.
So downtown Julie Brown probably was coming in around then.
Probably. I remember Kurt. Remember how old Kurt Loder, the news guy, was compared to everyone else at MTV?
Yes.
I know all the VJs seem like they were like 24, 23 years old.
That's why he did
Matt Pinfield.
That's why he did the news. And now over to old man Kurt.
Yeah. Remember when he tried to embarrass Jewel on TV for no apparent reason about her poetry book?
Yes, I do.
Because she had some, like, he must have hated Twitter when Twitter came along. Because, like, he literally, like, confronted Jewel because there were a couple of grammar mistakes in her. In a book. She wrote a book.
Of poetry. And, like,
he was bringing up, like, right here you say this. I even remember it was something with such casualties. And she meant casualties as in they were being casual about it. And he's like, that's not what that word means. And it's like, he must have hated when celebrities got a hold of Twitter and were just nonstop making errors all over the place. He was trying to hold them to a standard of craziness. And then June 29th, Salute Your Shorts ends on Nickelodeon. Another TV event from this time frame that I thought was worth bringing up is June 6th, Mystery Science Theater starts its fourth season on Comedy Central. And the movies they did in June were Marooned, The Giant Gila Monster, City Limits, and Teenagers from Outer Space.
So, and that is might have been when I discovered MST.
Yeah, it was around then. It was the last full Joel season. Yep. You know, the season ends with the infamous Manos Hands of Fate episode. And then Joel does half of the next season and Mike starts up halfway in. Good times. I put that in because we had no SNL news.
And I mean, it's the greatest show ever, so.
Yep. I mean, it's just a show. You should really relax.
I know.
All right, so let's dive into this comic book. Look at this blue cover. Blue Monday for Casey Jones. He's got some weird proportions here. He kind of looks like... All right, this is going to be very obscure, and no one's going to know what I'm talking about. But you know what this cover reminded me of?
What?
There was a Super Nintendo game based on the Spider-Man animated series.
Yes.
And Spider-Man had this weird proportion, like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's like very thick upper body and short legs. And that's what Casey Jones has on this cover here.
Yeah, I noticed he had abs on top of abs.
He kind of looks like they're trying to draw him in the vein of Logan. Speaking of Logan, of Wolverine.
Yeah.
He's very Wolverine looking on this cover. The abs, I guess that's supposed to be that's hair, the black lines. So he's hairy and he's got like crazy hair coming out of his mask. And the cover is him jumping out of a circle, kind of like the cover to Spider-Man 300. And behind him in like silhouetted blue are all the supporting characters of the issue. You've got April, you've got the four turtles, you've got nobody who's coming back. And then you've got the punks that he's going to fight up at the top.
Oh, I didn't notice those guys.
Yeah, they're there judging him in his shame circle. That's the title of this cover.
Which, this is probably the first time the old man turtle look makes sense, because they're all, like, you know, ashamed and disappointed in Casey.
Yeah, I thought the artwork throughout this issue was really good. I really liked the look of the turtles, even though I'm on record as preferring when they're drawn a little bit skinnier like they are in their first issue. This is a good second place look for them.
I mean, it's a decent
cover. So this
cover.
Is actually a very simple issue on the inside. I didn't even bother writing a summary. We're still going to go through, but I didn't even write it out. I was like, oh, there's like four beats to this story. So I can just flip through the comic as we go and
let you basically guys know what happens. Knew Eastman and Laird were back.
Exactly. Like, isn't that funny? As soon as Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird have their name in the writing spot again, we finally get another story where it's like, okay, these four things happen. That's the issue. And we've had to write, like, I've written some of these episodes we've had, my notes are 3 pages long for talking about what happens in the issue. And nope, not going to happen here. So it starts off with Casey out on patrol, and he's hopping rooftops near a steakhouse. And then it's just a cool first page to let you know what's going on with him. It's brings you right back to the turtles. They're hanging out in April's kitchen. I like when the turtles are just hanging out. Like, we need more of that in comics.
Yeah, IDW, you get a fair amount of it, but yeah, I know what you mean. It's, you don't get those quiet moments as much in Mirage, although a lot of times the turtles are just there too. So.
And then Splinter is there to interrupt their hanging out. He's going to give them a training mission where we basically learn why Casey was hopping rooftops on that first page. Is Splinter gives them this training exercise where he's going to drive them, what was it, 20 miles into the city?
Yeah, April is going to drive them into the city.
Yeah, April drives them into Springfield in the beat-up truck that we've seen. Not her van, not her Volkswagen, but the beat-up pickup truck. The one that looks like from the movie where they fix it up in the barn and then they come back in the rain. Anyway, the mission is she's going to drive them into the city and they have to find Casey Jones and bring him back. And if they can't find him in time, they have to walk the 20 miles from Springfield back to Northampton. So it's going to be a long 20-mile walk if they can't find him.
So I was curious if Jim Lawson had discovered capybaras at this point, because that's what Splinter looks like. Doesn't look like a dog. What's a those really big rodents. People post them on the internet all the time.
Yes.
I was like, I wonder if he found a picture of one.
He does, because he's got that square, it's like a square snout, you know?
Yeah, he's not rat, he's not dog, he's capybara this time. It works. I don't think it looks bad.
No, I like it. I like it a lot. So there's some really cool artwork of the turtles hopping out of the truck and hiding under this bridge here to come up with a plan. And right away, Raphael is actually kind of taking over sort of a leader role here. He's got a great idea. And even Leonardo is kind of giving him props for it. He's like, yeah, that's a good idea, Raph. I think he tells him you're improving, you know?
Yeah.
The idea is an immobile object is easier to find than a mobile one. So they're just going to find Casey's car and wait for him to get back to it. And that's how they're going to get him.
This issue has two firsts for the Turtles. Raph's first good plan, and apparently Donatello being the first one of them ever to think, well, I'm just going to ask Splinter if I can stay home and work on my science stuff. It was just funny to me.
I forgot to mention that.
That this is the first time it's come up.
It seems like the reason Donatello stays behind is he's not needed for this story. Like, it would have been too many characters. And as much as I love when all the turtles are involved, I think even having the three of them there was too. I think you could have done this story with just Leo and Raph.
I agree.
And it might have been a little better. And you know I love Michelangelo.
Michelangelo, you forget he's there.
Yeah. And I think that's why they had Donatello stay back, is you don't need all four turtles for the story that's coming. And it kind of would have been better if it was just Leo and Raph, and it was one of those stories where, like, four the first time, like, Raph is actually improving, and, like, Leo's like, hey, yeah, yeah. Because you'd think Raphael's plan would be something like, all right, we're going to beat the crap out of everyone we see until we find someone who's seen a guy with a golf bag. And no, he's got the great plan of, we'll wait by his car. He's got to use his car to go back. So there, boom. Meanwhile, though, Casey has been spying on the Turtles. And I think he's basically hip to their plan.
They're chuckleheads.
Yeah, you see him up top on this. There's no way he would get up there.
There's, like, no way there's gargoyles like that in Springfield.
Oh, yeah. We've mentioned that before. That this is the second. I think it was in the Tales book with Nobody, Tales issue number 2. They draw Springfield like it's Boston or like it's New York
City. Gotham
City. Springfield is not a giant city, guys. But, I mean, it's not the suburbs, but it's not like giant skyscrapers and things like that. So, but that's how they draw it. And he's up on this building with these gargoyles that, like, you know, normal superheroes, like Spider-Man swings up, Batman's got his claw machine, Superman flies. Like, they all have logical reasons for being up on a gargoyle. There's no way Casey would ever be able to climb up there with his hockey sticks and sporting goods.
But I think they just don't show it, and he tied a lawn dart to some rope and threw it up there. I mean, gargoyles are never this big in comics either. Like, usually they're big enough that the hero can crouch on them and it looks cool. Like, these things look like they're going to take the building down for being so top heavy.
So Casey comes down after hearing the Turtles' plan, and he goes for a stroll through the park when, bad timing, he's confronted by some local thugs who want to charge him a toll for crossing through the park. And they picked the wrong guy, because this is Casey Jones. He's basically Raphael. So they're on, like, a playground, and a fight breaks out. And Jones, I mean, I don't know how to say this without saying it really quick, but the art here is really, really good, because, so, let me get the panels open, and it'll probably be easier if I go that way.
I feel like this is the first time for Casey Jones they do a really great job of showing off, like, his brute strength.
Yeah. So there's one panel. He's got his hockey stick out, and there's three delinquents, we'll call them. And he takes the first two out kind of right away. This other kid attacks him and is stabbing at him with a good-sized knife. He's going to basically stab Casey in the face. You know, he's got his mask, but I'll bet this thing would have gone through the mask. It goes through his hockey stick, which he defends himself with. And then Casey knees him in the stomach, hits him with the hockey stick, and the other two run off. And he's like, ah, so long, losers. But, unfortunately, on the next page, Casey's trying to get the kid up, saying, you know, I hear your mom calling. Hey, kid, time to go. And then he's like, oh, Jesus. And he realizes that from the hockey stick to the head, most likely, the kid is dead. He's gone. He's no more. And before Casey has any time to process this information, he gets kicked in the back by Nobody, who is too late. Like, why couldn't you have been here 2 seconds ago? Nobody could have helped me avoid this situation.
So this
and
is
for those of you who don't remember Nobody, yeah. He was a character from Tales of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles issue number 2. It's going to come up a few times that they've met him before. He lives in Springfield, and he's kind of like Batman if Batman was a cop during the day.
Yeah. So this is, I don't know for you, but for me, the first problem I have with the issue.
Yeah.
I find it hard to believe Casey's never killed anyone before. especially yeah, it is something 48 you kinda issues have in.
To do a suspension of disbelief for, I think. Like, I think in a world, this exists in comic book logic land, where if you can read a Batman comic and really believe Batman's never killed someone before, I think you need to extend that same kind of thought process to Casey Jones's vigilantism.
Yeah, and then the other thing, the art's strong throughout, but I feel like nobody has even less design in this issue than in Tails.
Oh yeah, he's a mannequin. He's a mannequin with a cape.
Yeah.
He's all muscles. He doesn't have a face because of the mask. He's a mannequin in a cape. And I like, way before Incredibles made joke, after, you know, he kicks Casey in the back and he's like, you know, save it for the cops. You're going downtown. He's going to arrest Casey for killing that kid. Casey, you know, hits him back, flips him over and runs away. And while chasing after Casey Jones, he gets his cape caught in the swing set and it brings him down. And it's a cool joke that it was no capes from the Incredibles way before they did it.
Yeah, my note for that was that part is both realistic and stupid. Like, it's completely believable, but at the same time, I was just like, that's kind of dumb, but okay.
I think that's the perfect type of joke that summarizes the sense of humor that Ninja Turtles is always going for. Like, look how stupid this is. It's hilarious. I love it. You know?
Yeah.
And then there's a splash page where Casey is sitting in the cemetery, just kind of thinking about what happened.
So that's my favorite two pages in the whole story. I love how, like, the tombstones look like they're surrounding him and towering over him.
There's a crypt in the back that looks like the clock tower from Back to the Future.
Yes.
Do you think Doc Brown's buried in there?
92? Oh, yeah, yeah, because this is after Back to the Future 3. He could be.
Yeah.
It reminded me of... I know we've brought the Joker movie up before, but my favorite thing in that movie was at the beginning when he's laying in the alley and it looks like Gotham City's going to swallow him up. It gave me those vibes. I like that it had, like, it almost seems like the gravestones are going to, you know, all loom over Casey and, like, the earth is going to open up.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There's a movie that does that too, and I can't think of what it is. Where somebody gets, like, swallowed up into a grave like that. Oh, well, whatever. I'll think of it by the time I'm editing this and be mad at myself. Yep, I figured it out while editing. So what I was thinking of at the time was the version of A Christmas Carol with Scrooge McDuck, and there's a really intense scene with the Ghost of Christmas Future where he gets thrown into his grave and... Look it up. It's insane. I'll try to post it on Twitter. It's a really crazy thrown into the grave scene. Yeah, Casey starts doing that thing where you yell at yourself in the cemetery. Because, you know, that's what comic book characters do. They yell at themselves in cemeteries. And I like this part where he's looking at his mask. I think he drips blood onto the mask, but it looks like the mask is crying for a second.
It's
kind of got Watchmen vibes to it.
It's like the mask's first revelation of, oh man, some of those foot soldiers we killed too.
They don't count as people. They're like the hand. They don't have souls.
Oh. They just go into Justin Hardesty's video game Netherworld.
So that drip, I guess, came from nobody? This part wasn't clear to me.
Yeah,
but the blood that dripped onto the mask that looked like the mask was crying. The next panel is from, like, the ground up where you see standing on the gravestone above Casey Jones is nobody saying, end of the line, punk.
I think it's kind of funny through this issue to basically see nobody throwing lines that Casey would throw at thugs.
Yes. Yeah, they're very similar characters, which I think is why you don't see nobody a lot, because out of the two, Casey's obviously the more interesting character. And IDW just completely flipped nobody on its head, and like, their nobody is nobody in name only. You know what I mean? Like, that nobody has nothing in common with this nobody.
It's superior in a lot of ways, but we'll get there.
I agree. It is. But yeah, I've always, and this is why I've been reading Savage Dragon comics, I've always kind of liked the idea of a superhero who's a cop during the day. And I wish that was something we saw more of.
I don't think you're going to see much of that for a long time.
Well, that's why, like, with all that type of, you know, political stuff that we're not going to get too into because this is a Ninja Turtle podcast, but like, I feel like that would create a lot of interesting stories. The Ninja Turtles, we cut away to them because it's their book, and they're on the rooftop. The three of them are on the rooftop. They see the punks that Casey was fighting earlier that got away are running, and they're like, oh, those two sure are in a hurry. And they dive down into the park where they were running away from, and they find the kid that Casey has killed. In fact, I believe it's Raphael here saying, yep, this dude's toast.
Because if anyone's going to be able to identify that, it's Raph.
Yeah. And then Mikey gives his only contribution to this issue, really.
Yep, yep.
Where he says, what do you think happened? I'm telling you, it could have just been Leo and Raph.
It really could have. I almost waited for when Donnie got out of it for Mikey to be like, hey, Master Splinter, I have all this television research I need to get done, so can I stay too?
Yeah. And then Mikey also finds the little bit of cape that nobody left tied to the swing set when he ran through. They're just curious. They know something's going on. They also, they find Casey Jones's broken hockey stick, so they know Casey is involved. And then it cuts back to Casey fighting nobody in the cemetery. Eventually, nobody is, you know, finally realized that no capes is a good rule, and he's like, damn cape, and he takes it off. And he throws it over Casey Jones' face, which I liked, so that it's kind of like in hockey when you pull their jersey over their head.
Yeah.
Like, so he could fight them a little better. And the fight continues. It's about 3 pages of fighting with Casey Jones half in handcuffs from before. He's about to get arrested. Nobody finally, like, pins him up against a big old grave angel thing. And he's about to get the other cuff on when the turtles show up. And the turtles are, like, the voice of the reader here.
Yeah.
Where they're basically like, hey, nobody, we've seen you do just as bad. And they reference back in Tales of Ninja Turtles issue 2 when he shot a rocket launcher at a helicopter. It's like, you killed those guys. You know, like, you're acting outside the law as well. There's a weird little element to it where they say, like, Casey will be brought to justice, and they walk him away. And I'm like, you guys aren't. You're not justice. What are you going to Ninja Turtles?
Bring him back and be like, Splinter, Casey killed a kid. What do we do?
Yeah, like, letting nobody arrest him would be bringing him to justice. You guys are basically like, look, stuff happens in this line of work. You did it too. Let's call this a wash.
It's the I don't wear hockey pads moment for Ninja Turtles. And it works and it doesn't work. Like, I like all the vigilante discussion and, like, well, what's the difference between what you're doing and what we do? But at the same time, they don't bring up questions like, okay, so if you've arrested him, you're not on duty right now. How the heck do you explain this when you bring him in?
Yeah. And also, it doesn't apply to the turtles, really, at least not in the Mirage Turtles at this point.
No.
Because as we've said on the podcast, trouble finds them.
They're not actively seeking.
They had to do this story with Casey Jones. This is a story that, like, they couldn't have done this with Raphael, you know? It had to be, well, I guess he's the one they could have done it with because he sometimes goes out on patrol. But I really like that they did focus on Casey Jones for this story. I like the human element to it. And, of course, it you know, it ends with them taking their guy away. The turtles say nobody tells them this will make them accomplices.
Which you know, were you not in your getup right now? Maybe we could take that a little more seriously.
Yeah, but they say justice will be served, and they walk away with him. And, you know, it is going to be resolved next issue. We don't want to give too much away. It ends there with a shot of the empty graveyard with Casey's mask on the ground, still with the blood tear. And I don't like that it says the end on one of the graves, because it's not the end.
Yeah.
This is the middle of a two-part story. The story's not even resolved. I could see if it were like a two-part story where there was some resolution here.
Yeah.
But it's not even resolved at all. It's just he didn't get arrested by nobody. But I don't know. Story's still going to continue.
So the only moment we skipped over, it's kind of inconsequential, but it's funny to me. So the truck breaks down while April's trying to get back to Northampton. And the thing that has baffled me since Sky Highway is, if Casey Jones is such a gearhead, why do all his vehicles break down constantly?
That's a decent question. He's not as good at it as he thinks he is.
I guess not, because that's her contribution to the story, is dropping them off and breaking down. And again, you're right. This probably should have just been Casey, Leo Raff, nobody is the main, and the others just kind of there.
But I did like the issue. I rated it pretty high. I gave it a 4.3 out of 5, which is 86%. It's really cool. I love that if you go back when you know what the story is and you go back and like relook at the punks and Casey fighting in the park, it is clearly self-defense. Like, Casey was just trying to walk through the park. These guys attacked him. It wasn't like an incident where he was chasing down just a purse snatcher and went too far. You know what I mean? These guys attack him in the park. He is defending himself. He pretty much, the death blow comes right after this guy almost stabs him in the face, and he reacts by hitting him with the hockey stick. So I like that it was a clear-cut case of self-defense there.
It's the dangers of we ain't get no tolls, we ain't eat no rolls. And
I have no idea what that means, but I like it.
It's from Robin Hood Men in Tights.
I don't remember that at all.
Oh, wow. Go back and
you
watch it.
Watch that movie.
But no, I agree. That was, so I gave the issue a 3.0. I didn't like it as much as you. But it was because of things like that. Like, had this been an instance of, you know, Casey was out doing this mission with the turtles, and then maybe he saw a woman getting mugged and he intervened, and then, you know, he went too far, then I feel like all the other stuff in the issue with nobody and wanting to arrest him, and it would have hit a lot better for me. And then the other problem I had is, we've been so out of continuity at this point that now that we're back in continuity, I'm not there yet where I care. So this issue's kind of inconsequential to me.
Well, you know, Casey's one of my favorite characters, so of course I'm going to eat it up whenever we get something centered around him. And I also actually, I think, got a little bump in my rating from that bit where the cape gets caught on the swing set.
That's fair.
It's just so perfectly silly. That perfectly encapsulates the humor of Ninja Turtles. Like, stuff like when the ooze canister bounced off the kid's face in the first issue, and it was a parody of Daredevil. Yep. Like, things like that. It's so good.
So, for me, it's okay, Turtles.
I like it. It's good Turtles. Good Turtles to me. Okay for you. Definitely not a bad issue. Would you recommend people read it?
I mean, I would, because it does come into play, you know, with the rest of what we're going to get into. So, no, I definitely think it's worth a read because it factors into the rest of the run of the book. And I think the other thing that knocked against it for me is that I loved the Savante Romero Renette stuff so much. And that was just before this. And I feel like I needed another, like, in continuity, but, like, not important self-contained issue before this one. And then I would have been more invested.
Well, also, like, spoilers for next week. I walked away from this two-parter feeling just like the last two-parter, where I'm like, oh, good. They figured out exactly how many issues these stories should be. Like, one was never enough. It was too cramped. And three was always too much. I feel like they're really good at these two-part stories now.
But I also, Casey Jones is not one of my favorite characters, so I don't have that going into it.
I love him. Love him and his bag of nonsense.
Bag of nonsense. That should be his...
that
should be his official name.
He's basically their universe's Rorschach. Like, he's the allegory for, like, parodying or satirizing the over-the-top vigilante. Like, you're not supposed to like him. You know what I mean? Like, those type of characters.
Yeah, the anti-hero.
Yeah.
I Casey Jones and his bag of nonsense.
And that's probably why I like him, because I always hate those types of characters. So I like that when he's in Turtles comics, he's supposed to be like a making fun of those characters type of character.
We'll get into it, but for me...
This is what people... I'm just now realizing this is what people mean when they say they love Damian Wayne or they love Superboy Prime. Yeah. Like, when they're talking about these characters that are super annoying and are meant to be hated, and like, oh, you love to hate him.
Yeah.
And I don't hate Casey Jones. I just love... I love how much he perfectly encapsulates how dumb those characters are.
Yeah, I think this is going to lead down a lot of interesting paths as we go through the rest of Volume 1 here. So, I've already moved on from Casey Jones and Mirage at this point. So.
Okay.
But we'll delve into that more.
Have some great stuff coming up in Volume 2, though. Some stuff that they can't seem to decide if they want to make part of Turtles history or not. But anyway, loved this Casey Jones issue, and that brings us into our toy figure facts.
Pizza power!
Terminate the turtles!
Oh, goody! Fresh turtles for lunch. Turtle soup, my favorite.
You shellheads are dead.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
From Playmate.
And of course, for toy figures, I had to do Casey Jones, because it's his issue, and we haven't talked about him yet.
Amazing we haven't brought him up yet.
So, the Casey Jones toy, the Battering Vigilant Sportsman. These toys are interesting because, like, the toys came out a lot of times, you know, before the characters were even fully fleshed out in the comics. Mm. Like, this toy was in the 1989 basic assortment. We barely knew Casey. He had like 10 comic book appearances at that point. Accessories: broken bats, golf club, and golf bag. Vital statistics: his height is 6'2", which doesn't look like
it
on the cover of this
issue.
I was going to
say, he never seemed like he was that tall.
He looks like a Wolverine. Weight: 235 pounds with fully loaded golf bag. Favorite sports team: Mudville Slingers.
That sounds right.
Favorite food: Shake and Break Chicken. I guess they didn't have the rights to Shake and Bake. Because he's going to break them. Favorite swing: Grand Slam. It's also his favorite food at Denny's.
Yep.
Do they still do that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It says battering average instead of batting average, which is probably intentional. Battering average, count the splinters. There's only one splinter, and he is our master. What's that about? Description: like all psychos, Casey Jones, the masked sportsman, wanted to be a legend. Armed with broken bats, shattered dreams, and one golf club, Casey turned his ambition towards crime fighting. Modeling himself after his favorite vigilante cop show, Casey decided to take law into his own mitts. Outfitted with cast-off sports gear, Casey challenges every criminal who dares to go out of bounds. This bat-bearing vigilante fights to rid the world of all bad sports, including those who would dare steal second base. Steal, get it? Casey's got a score to settle. Wow, there's a lot of sports puns here. Casey's got a score to settle against all lawless losers, from litter bugs to madmen bent on world domination. Teaming up with our beloved turtle teens, Casey strikes out with a special vengeance against Shredder and the Foot Clan. So like I said, he was part of the 1989 basic assortment, so that set of figures, he was released with Ace Duck, Genghis Frog, Metalhead, another favorite of mine, Usagi Yojimbo, mentioned him at the top of the episode, General Trag, who was one of the rock soldiers, Rat King, Leatherhead, Baxter Stockman, and Krang.
So how much do you think lawbreakers pay for him in the package?
I'm going to go with I'm going to shoot about $250.
Okay. If this was The Price is Right, you'd lose because you're over by $50, but...
Dang.
Yeah.
That's not a bad price. $200 for Casey Jones in package, I'd pay it.
$200 and then about...
If I collected figures.
$25, $30 loose with all this stuff. I always thought it would...
That makes sense.
I didn't ever have a Casey Jones figure until I got my reaction one.
Maybe that's where our disconnect is, because I had one as a kid.
No, I didn't have him until I started collecting the reactions, and now I have him. But even as a kid, I always thought it was weird he only got one figure.
Yeah, he's not in the cartoon show a lot. I think that's part of it. Maybe he's too violent a character for a kid's show.
I don't know, because they did all those, they did sports turtles and... military I feel like he fits into all those lines where they did different riffs on the turtles.
He kind of reminds me, this is just occurring to me live as I say this, he kind of reminds me of if Bill Burr was a superhero. The comedian. I wish I could do, so many people online do Bill Burr impressions, but...
I can't do Bill Burr.
Are you going to steal again? Huh? You ever going to take that girl's purse? No!
I mean, it's fitting. He's from Mass, so...
Yeah.
Seth Rogen, if...
Go over there and think about what you did, you idiot.
If you're listening, if you get Casey Jones in the movie, maybe try Bill Burr.
He's doing Star Wars and stuff. He's out there. Look at me, I'm talking to turtles. That's the worst Bill Burr impression ever. So yeah, I think that's all our thoughts for this week. Slightly shorter episode, but you know, simpler comic. So I kind of prefer it that way. I like when the comics are just like the basic beats of the comic are just, you know, the turtles go to catch Casey for a training exercise. While Casey's avoiding the turtles, he fights some kids, accidentally kills one of them, then nobody tries to arrest him for it. The turtles won't let him. The end.
So we're in continuity now till the end, right?
I don't think anything breaks it.
So, yeah, the guest era is at its end.
Good. No, there are some good issues in there, of course, but... I prefer it when it's in continuity. There's just something about that makes the comics so much more meaningful.
Well, like I said, it's been so long, I don't even really care what happened in this issue. And I probably should.
I think it's a great way to dip their toes back. I mean, it's getting you back into the universe, back into the idea of everything that's happening is really happening to these characters just in time for their giant event.
So if you want to hit on, jump on our Twitter, send us some capybara pictures.
Can you have them as pets?
I'm something sure people might people have out do. There? I mean, it's considered a rodent.
Yeah. Maybe in the new movie they're making, they can make Splinter a capybara instead of a rat. I wouldn't
I'd
hate
be
it.
Okay with that. It's a good design.
I definitely just want them to stay as far away from the last movie version of Splinter as possible. Just please. That thing was so hard to look at.
Yeah, that was rough. Thank God he was not in out of the shadows as much.
It's a good thing he didn't find a cookbook in the sewers instead of a ninja book. Then they would have just been chefs.
There's just too broad a... Oh, I found a coloring book, a crossword today. What will I teach the turtles?
So, thank you everybody for listening, and we're so glad that we have listeners, and we would like you to do us a favor and tell all your friends. You know, like Batman said in the first movie, I want you to tell your friends about me. I'm the Ninja Turtle nerd.
We won't hold you off a roof.
Yeah, tell if you... Yeah, if you know someone who likes Ninja Turtles, tell them to listen along. Leave us a review. We haven't said that in a while. It really helps the podcast. We've got a few new ones that have trickled in, and we appreciate those. But yeah, it's great great doing this podcast. We want to keep doing it, so spread the word. Let people hear. And we'll see you next time for part two of Shades of Grey. Which won't actually be Shades of Grey Part 2. It'll be something else.
I spent so much time stopping lawbreakers, I've become one.
The Ninja Turtle Nerds is a fan-supported podcast. If you'd like to support the show, head on over to patreon.com/TMNTNerds. If you'd like to see images of the comics we discussed in this episode, you can follow us on Twitter or Instagram at TMNTNerds. Have a question or comment for us? You can email us at tmntnerds@gmail.com. And if you like the show, be sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Thank you very much for listening.